I'll try all that stuff. Like I said, he's fairly new to the hobby. He got his license when I got mine back in April, but due to the fact he's unable to hit line walk, he hasn't really got any ham experience, and that's something he really wants to change. So I'll have to work on with that. Again, thanks for the information, and I'll let you guys know either way how that turns out.
Matt, you're the guy with the experience for your friend that lives in Bed-Stuy, and you're the Elmer that's going to help him on this one. He's going to learn a lot about radio multipath. If you could see that radio wave, it's like a whole bunch of ping pong balls that are perfect. You got a bushel basket full of them. You stand inside the house and you throw the bushel basket violently. And these perfect ping pong balls are bouncing off the floors, the walls, the ceiling, the windows. That's what the radio signal is doing if you could see it. And you got to find the magic place in the apartment where the ping pong balls bounce just right and come to a nice strong signal, if you know what I mean. That radio signal is bouncing all over the place. That's what multipath is. And that's why you've got to move things in orientation and in translation. That's what I mean by tilting it and rotating it and moving it up, down, left, right. You'll find the hot spots. And once he finds that hot spot, he'll be able to operate there. He's going to find out where's the hot spot in the living room, where's the hot spot in the bedroom, and so on. And maybe one of them's a hell of a lot better than the other, and maybe that's where he locates the antenna. And even if the building is a perfect radio shield, and you've got to go outside, and even if the fire escape is on the wrong side of the building compared to line mark, still there's going to be outside the building a hot spot somewhere on that fire escape that's going to allow you to get strong reception, even though it's on the wrong side, because maybe the signal bounces off the building across the street, if you know what I mean. It's very difficult to model this on a computer, very difficult to predict this, but you walk around with a handy talkie, you're going to get 1,000 answers, good and bad, within 1 hour. And you choose the best of those 1,000 answers, and the guy's going to say, hey, your buddy's going to say, Matt, boy, does that man understand radio. Wow, is he a smart guy. That's what you got to look forward to, Matt. Good luck with that project. Please come back.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Please come back and let us know how it turned out, even if it's good or bad. The next person on my list was Howie. Howie, what would you like to discuss tonight? If you did, I think you had a question or a comment. KQRIW in the TechNet.
KQRIW, W2HWW. First, I just want to say I hope Mel gets better. Second, Nick, last week you guys got into a discussion about how radio waves propagate. You said you're starting to understand something different, and you're learning new things. Okay. Now, question is this. I'm just throwing this out just to stir the pot a little bit. If we want to think about radio waves either being magnetic or electrical, or E or M field, or the H field, if you want to call it, now, how sure are we of what are the health consequences to radio waves? You know, they're using magnets now in alternative medicine to help people feel better, to cure things. So when we get down to the biological level, to how cells work and how cells rotate, and there are some animals that use the magnetic field of the planet to navigate, and I would assume that even human beings are affected by magnetic waves. So I'll just throw that out there. KQRIWWD2HWW. Wanted to hear if you had any comments in that area.
How many hours have you got? I got lots of comments on this. It's a slightly controversial subject. There are people who will put magnets inside of a garment of some kind, real strong magnets, with the north aiming toward the body or the south aiming toward the body, and wear them, and they believe they're getting health benefits. Slightly controversial. In some cases, it may be true. If I cut my finger if I put my finger inside of a lawnmower and I broke the bone between the tip, and the rest of my index finger, a buddy of mine managed to build an electronic circuit that put some voltage between the two, and he put a magnet nearby, and he is convinced that he was getting no healing for the first 6 months, and with a combination of the magnetic field and the E field that he was creating that the bone healed in the next 6 months, and he's convinced that it worked, and he might be right. Yes, there are birds that navigate with magnetic detection within their body, and you take one of these birds that migrates from Florida to Alaska, we'll say, Florida to Maine, Florida to Nova Scotia, and you take one of these real strong, extremely tiny neodymium magnets, and maybe he's using magnetic field for part of his navigating, and you glue that to the back of his head, he could very well be very disturbed, and maybe he won't be able to migrate anymore. So yes, magnetic fields can do good. In that case, magnetic field for that bird could give him an awful lot of grief. Let me drop. But between the antenna connector of almost every radio you own and the loudspeaker or the earphones, there is 120 decibels of gain as a round number. Every radio you own has 120 decibels of gain. That is, let me think now, a million, I think it's 1,000,000 to 1 in voltage. I think it's 100,000,000,000 to 1 in power. It's a huge gain. The net result of all that analysis is that an extremely strong, extremely small signal level at the antenna can give you tremendous performance of a radio. Radios are extremely sensitive things. Because you're hearing a nice loud signal coming out of that loudspeaker of your phone, of your radio, or out of the earphone, you think that, boy, the signal that must be going in there is gangbusters. It'll cook an egg, so to speak, and it's going to do things to your body. You'd be amazed how extremely small the signals are, even with that cell phone plastered up against the side of my head. You'd be amazed how small that signal really is, with rare exception. So the amount of biological damage that radio signals are capable of doing to human beings under quasi-normal conditions, using a handy-talkie, using a cell phone, doing text messaging, and whatever, all the things, running my remote controls to my garage door opener or to my television set or so on, all of these are extremely strong, extremely small signals. I won't say that the danger to your body is zero. I mean, the safest thing in the world is clean, clear, cool water. I can kill you with that. And a certain number of college students die every year because during their hazing, they get into a competition of who can consume the most amount of water in 20 minutes, and some overly enthusiastic 19-year-old kid will drink so many quarts of water that he damages his body. You can kill a man internally with water, even though it's the safest stuff in the world. So everything can...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Everything in the world can be misused. That's fact number one. Fact number two, there's a tiny amount of damage in everything you do. You're not going to get out of this life alive. There's a little bit of danger in everything you do. A rational man looks at what he's about to do, and he evaluates the profit-to-gloss ratio, the good-to-the-bad ratio, the danger-to-the-benefit, the benefit-to-risk ratio. Those are the words I'm looking for. Everything you do has a benefit-to-risk ratio. I can drive a lot further distance in my automobile, and I can get a much better job. But I'm putting my life at risk when I climb into that automobile because there's a chance I'm going to die in that automobile. And we as a rational person, we evaluate every one of those situations every day of our life, and we make a judgment. And in some cases, the judgment is a roll of the dice, if you know what I mean. I can be the safest driver in the world, and I might die. And I might be a very lucky guy, even though I'm not a safe driver. So I won't sit here and say that radio is absolutely, positively the safest thing in the world, that no one's ever been damaged with it. Can't say that. But the huge benefit we're getting from wireless products is so great. The amount of damage we're suffering because of them is so small. To discuss radio frequency biohazard under quasi-normal conditions today is almost irrational. The people in certain towns that are trying to remove all antennas from their town, and they've got a good motivation. They're protecting their children. But it's a huge misunderstanding of the physics and the reality of the situation. Radio has been studied for 60 solid years by way of the American National Standards Institute C95 report. Yes, we didn't study cigarette smoking. Let me drop this. We didn't study cigarette smoking soon enough, and people were damaged. We didn't study asbestos exposure soon enough, and people were damaged. And there's a whole lot of similar situations. but radio is something that was so new, so fantastic sounding, and therefore it looked like it had a lot of potential danger. Simply putting electricity in your house is a danger. The very first time they put electric light bulbs in the White House, the capital of this country, the people who turned on and off the switches to turn on the lights at nighttime and turn them off the next morning, in the beginning, those people got hazardous duty pay for operating those switches because they believe the electricity is going to leak out of the socket and spray into the room and do danger to you. We're a lot smarter now, and we realize that electricity under proper conditions is very safe. Radio under proper conditions is hugely safe. One of the things I said today in my little speech was that we are the smart people when it comes to wireless technology. We have to slowly educate the general public around us that radio is their friend. It is not absolutely positively zero in risk, but the risk is so darn small, the benefit is so darn high, to not use it is craziness. Really craziness. And if you think it's dangerous, then objectively investigate it. If I go to the wrong website, I can find where somebody has taken thousands and thousands of reports, some of them good, some of them bad, and I choose all the bad ones, all the ones where somebody thinks they found deleterious effects of radio. I take all of those reports, I put them all into one website. Boy, I can convince you that water should never be used again. You should never touch a radio again. You shouldn't be in the same town where the radio is. And I could convince you of that. It's craziness. You got to be objective when you're doing research, and you got to look for the verification. The fact that somebody has written a book, the fact that somebody has written a website and published a report, that is a good step, but then the next step is, how objective was that test? What was his instrumentation? Did he know what he was doing? Was it properly calibrated? Was it done under reasonable conditions? Is the data he came up with valid? You ask yourself a series of questions and you do objective reporting, objective investigation, and you stand the chance of finding out the truth of anything. What you're onto right now is an extremely controversial subject, and you've got Hempstead Town doing the damnedest things it can do to get rid of cell sites, and they're absolutely wrong. They're wasting their time. Bayville is trying to get rid of all antennas in their town, and these people are not alone. These are honest people trying to protect their children, trying to protect their citizens, but strongly misunderstanding what's going on. It's a technology they don't understand, and therefore they assume it's bad to begin with, in other words, you're guilty until you're proven innocent is the way they're treating the situation. They got it backwards. So everything I know tells me it's extremely safe unless you do something very, very dumb. And I'll give you one last experiment on that one. I'm the guy who wrote an article called The Stripline Parallel Kilowatt Amplifier for 432. This 3-pound amplifier that you can easily build with hand tools. I built the first one in the bedroom of my house in the apartment where I was living. In 1970. That 3-pound amplifier with the right power supply will put out 700 watts at 432 megacycles. If I took that 700 watts and put it into a simple corner reflector antenna, where the radiating element would be 11 inches long, the corner reflector, you know what a corner reflector UHF antenna looks like. If I put 700 watts into that antenna, tape it to the bedpost, and stand in front of that antenna with my head 1 foot in front of that antenna, and I press down the key, and I stay there for 6 minutes. Boy, I've done a lot of dumb things to do all that. If I do all that, there's a better than 50-50 chance after 6 minutes I will have damaged my eyes. But look what the hell I had to do. That's a severe set of really bad decisions in order to get myself in that trouble. You see where I'm going on this one, Howie? Back to you, sir. K2RIW.
Understand that. All right, two things. One, all these towns that are looking to do this, what's going to happen if these people do get rid of cell sites? Are they going to want it back when they find that they can't use their cell site? And the other thing is this. Yes, you're talking about heating, but is heating the only damage? You see, as RF engineers, as people in RF, we look at just the heating effect. What about the fact that the reproduction? Has anybody looked at that? And is there any way to really tell if cancer is being produced? I'm just throwing this out as an argument, Dick. And if other people besides you can have a different point of view, that would be interesting. But I find it very interesting to see that a lot of towns don't want this. But what's going to happen when they get rid of cell site towers? Is the pendulum going to swing the other way? Because people are going to say, hey, I can't use my cell phone, and people want the convenience. K2RAWWB2HWW. I agree with you, Dick, that the risk that radio might have is outweighed by the good thing, the ability to communicate, the ability to save lives, the ability to call your wife and say, I'm on my way home, honey. I mean, yeah, there is. The car itself puts out pollution. And you very well articulated the fact that we get into a car, we take a chance. You get on an airplane can crash, but we take that chance. We say, okay, it's a one in so many millions, and I want to go see my family in California, or I want to go to Europe, or whatever. You get on an airplane. Everything has a risk. K2RAWWD2HWW.
Give that man a cigar. You said a mouthful. Everything has risk. You can try your damnedest to live a life with zero risk. You will be extremely frustrated, and you won't do anything. You'll be afraid to get out of bed in the morning, and even that's dangerous if you stay there. You're not getting exercise, and your body will atrophy in certain ways. Now, you've asked some good logical questions, but let me jump into a silly philosophy. A brave man dies but once, a coward dies many times. You're worried about what's going to happen when all the antennas are removed from the town. That ain't going to happen. There's a whole lot of steps required. You cannot remove the cell site antennas. You cannot remove the law enforcement antennas, the ambulance and the fire department antennas. You cannot remove those antennas without an act of Congress. And I'm only half kidding on that one. The Department of Homeland Security won't let you do it. Your county won't let you do it. Your state won't let you do it. The federal government won't let you do it. The FCC won't let you do it. You can make as many lawsuits as you want. You can hire as many lawyers as you want. You can spend as much money as you want. Bill Gates, if he wanted to remove the antennas from his town with his fortune, I don't think all of the agencies that are fighting to make sure that they stay will let him do that. Those antennas are not coming out. There's going to be a federal lawsuit. There's going to be a case in a federal court that overturns that ruling that was done in Hempstead Town. Let me drop. I'm quite disappointed that the mayor of Hempstead Town, very smart lady, didn't look the next couple of steps ahead. She has allowed to be signed into law a set of ordinances that say you can't put a cell site within 1,500 feet of a habitable structure. You know, a home, a synagogue, a church, a school, within 1,500 feet. Where the hell did that number come from? There's going to be a federal case that's going to strike it down, as it has already been struck down in other communities. I'm a bit amazed that the mayor didn't see that coming. It's all a great big waste of time and money. And the only way you can evaluate whether or not this new cell site really is required is you hire an expert. Well, that was the same expert, Mr. Conti, who allowed you to write the law in the first place. And then you're going to hire him to evaluate the new proposal for the cell site. And then when the federal law comes up, you hire him to defend you. And when the federal case is decided against the town, then Mr. Conti walks away and does the same thing in some other town. How in the world did the mayors of these towns not look 2, 3, 4 steps ahead?
And politics.
They can see what's going to happen. Why did they walk down? You and I, Howie, would not walk down a road when we know there's a brick wall across the end of it that is not going to take you where you want to go. You're not going to get there. Why in the world do you go down that road in the first place? You got to look ahead a couple of steps. And to take the very myopic view that I'm getting rid of them now and I'm going to satisfy the citizens, that's not enough. That's not going to work. These things are here to stay. The genie is out of the bottle. Let me drop.
Politics, Dick. It's politics.
The genie is out of the bottle. There are 20 wireless products being used in our domestic homes today, right now. We have fallen in love with wireless everything. We can't do without it. A bunch of well-meaning but misinformed people are going to say that radio is dangerous and you got to get rid of it. And there's another group of people, all of these agencies, saying you can't get rid of it. It is here to stay. And by the way, I used to say that if you really wanted to live without all of this radio exposure, you go live with the Amish and the Mennonites. You can't do that. I found out that the Mennonites and Amish people are selling portions of their land to the cell site owners, and they're collecting the money from it. You can't even go there to get away from it. There are people who think that the signals coming out of the 60-cycle wiring of the house and the ballast transformers on the fluorescent lighting, that those magnetic fields are damaging their health, and they think they're getting headaches from it. When they go camping and they get away from all this, they think they're healthier. It's very difficult to document that. I think there's an error. I think it's psychosomatic. I think it's not real. But radio has been studied for 60 years. And not only the United States, every single major country in the world has been studying radio for roughly the same length of time. So the chances of it being really deleterious, and we didn't, and we somehow missed it, with all of those 450 references that are in the ANSI report, of all of those well-equipped laboratories and institutions doing all this research, for them to all miss it and to find out there really is something else beyond the thermal effect. 99.9% of anything radio does appears to be thermal. Let me drop. If I did an extremely careful experiment right at the instant of fertilization, or right at the instant of mitosis of a cell, I might, under certain conditions with a strong enough signal, find out that I can disturb that delicate process taking place at that instant of time. So maybe there is a small risk factor along those lines. However, you'd be amazed how many of those reports people have gone and done experiments and looked for that exact effect. And for the most part, they didn't find it. One or two of those reports, they thought they saw a little bit of an effect, and somebody else duplicates the exact same experiment in some other laboratory, and the effect is not there. If you can't, if you've got a beautiful theory, and you use good instrumentation, like John and Wesley are trying to do, they're buying instrumentation like it's going out of style, and they're going to be making a set of experiments, and hopefully their experiments are going to be somewhat calibrated and somewhat rational as far as the measurements, and therefore traceable to a bureau somewhere, and therefore the results mean something. In order for doing experiments along those lines, so if you can't duplicate the experiment that you think shows a deleterious effect and show it in one, two, or three other laboratories, most likely it's a random variable, most likely it's not real. That's been going on for 60 years. The word RF radiation, that darn emotional word, is what's scaring people, and they think they got to get rid of it. And they think they think radiation is radiation. Nuclear is equally as bad as radio, is what they think. Well, nuclear and radio are about as related. They're not even an apple and an orange in relationship. It's an apple and a pencil, if you know what I mean. So I won't say it's zero, Howie, but a lot has gone into it. And it's good to ask the question, but to try to eliminate the antennas from your town is highly irrational. Over to you, Howie, K2RIW.
Get an argument from me, Dick, just brought it up as a repeater owner. What's going on? It's crazy. There's a lot of stuff going on in the city. The city wants to start doing things. Everybody's getting into the act. It's all about politics. It's all about saying, it's all about pleasing people, and that's what it is. All right, K2RIW, WD2HW, thank you very much, Dick. I don't know if anybody else wants to make a comment. I just brought it up because last week you talked about other ways that we really don't understand RF, but I don't think it's that dangerous. I think you get more danger from the sun. You get more exposure if you stay out all day to the sun than you get from all the RF that's on the planet.
WGB with a comment.
Yeah, John, recognized. To say it's politics, Howie, is overly simplistic. It is misinformation. Every one of the ham radio operators that you know, the ones that are in the sound of my voice or beyond, are really charged with the responsibility whether we accept it or not. We are the radio-informed people on this planet. We touch it, we eat it, we feel it. We got emotionally involved. We talk about it for thousands of hours on end in just the TechNet alone. 3,500 hours of TechNet have taken place. We really love radio. It's our passion. We're as close to it as anybody can get. We have the responsibility to take what little knowledge we've got and inform the general citizen about how safe it is. There's one ham radio operator per 500 citizens in most of the developed nations. That means 499 people out of every 500 are uninformed about what radio really is. We've got that smart. We've got that nugget of information. We can't keep that light under a bushel basket. We've got to publish it. We've got to talk to our friends, and we've got to go easy with this one, because it's like discrimination. It's like what was happening with in the South in the 1960s, if you know what I mean. For generations, people have an attitude, and to correct that attitude is going to be slow and arduous, and it's going to take time. We're talking about something that's almost cultural, cultural shift here, a sea change is what's required. But 499 citizens out of 500, whatever they know about radio, I'll bet you half of it is wrong. We've got the knowledge. We've got to tell them. It's their friend. It's not their enemy.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
It's giving them 99%, 99.9% benefit, and maybe 0.01% risk, if you know what I mean. The biggest risk is the dollars you got to invest in each one of those cell phones. Are you buying the right brand name that's going to make you happy and have the right amount of dropouts for your particular house in town when you operate the thing? So, as I said today, we are charged with the responsibility of spreading the word. We have the word, whether we know it or not. We only talk to each other. We got to talk to the general citizens. They've got to get the word. We don't need hazardous duty pay to operate the switch on your cell phone. The guys in the White House used to get hazardous duty pay to turn on and off the light switches when the White House was first electrified. In its day, that seemed like a rational thing. Right now, we laugh at it. It's preposterous. It's ridiculous. That's about where we are with our cell phones. Over to you, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. I don't know if you've been following it. I assume you have been. But there's been a shift. They realize that they've lost the radiation end of it, and it's too complex, and they realize they've been defeated there. But they're pushing the states' rights issues and the municipality issues as aesthetic qualities, and they are determined to win. That's the new shift that they've made, and if you've been reading on some of these later applications, they're promulgating only aesthetic qualities now. So there, they might have an issue, and that's a scary thought, but I'm sure that somehow that could be turned around for eminent domain and protection of the citizens. That's what I believe, but boy, oh boy, you're right. This could be a disaster of monumental proportion.
KC2FYJ with a comment.
Harry, recognize, going to get you in a second. On the way home from Paramus, New Jersey this afternoon, I saw one of those really ugly cell phone stations where they tried to make it look like a tree. Somebody said for aesthetic reasons, you're going to make the cell site, all right, we're going to tolerate the cell site, but you're going to make them look pretty. All right, we'll make them look like a tree. My goodness, that's no tree that Mother Nature ever created. That is the homeliest looking thing in the world. There are some really beautiful artificial trees that people put into their house every Christmas time. The Christian people are putting some very beautiful trees in the house. Making an artificial tree look good is not that difficult. These guys are not trying. So making the cell site prettier by camouflaging it, by putting it in the right location, by making it look like a tree or making it look like a building or making it look like anything else, I'll admit that the aesthetic argument is a little bit more serious, but they're not going to win that one either. Not a chance. I'm not worried. I'm about as worried as I was with broadband over Internet. When you study the economics of broadband over Internet and the real bandwidth you can get out of it, it doesn't come close to what fiber can do. Economically, it didn't stand a chance. Well, aesthetically approaching getting rid of cell sites, it ain't going to work. Yeah. One or two communities are going to do something, but it's going to be a flash in the pan is my best guess. Maybe Harry sees it another way. KC2FYJ, K2RIW. Go ahead, Harry.
AC2EZ.
Bob recognized, and Harry first.
Well, it just occurs to me that if someone couches the argument properly, that any ordinance on aesthetics will get overturned as well, because we're talking about a state or a local municipality imposing legislation preventing something from being used that was federally licensed. And that's the state and local government overturning federal regulations, and that is unconstitutional. Someone just has to present that argument forcefully enough. That's my opinion.
You got a strong point, Harry. So even the people pursuing aesthetics as a way of getting rid of cell sites, first of all, their general motivation to desire to get rid of a cell site is in reality crazy. But then, yeah, maybe you're going to hire an attorney who's going to sound like he's supporting your case on aesthetics. But he's also smart enough to look two or three steps ahead, and he knows that in the end he's not going to win that one, but he's going to collect the fee between now and then. It's another one of these situations where if you want to win the chess game, you've got to think two or three moves ahead. When you're playing one of these games that sounds like politics, that sounds like aesthetics, that sounds like a radio frequency biohazard, you think you've got a good premise that to get rid of cell sites is to the benefit of mankind. And boy, it takes some really bent thinking to even come up with an attitude like that. And then you think you've got an approach, and you start rationally thinking two, three steps ahead. Are you sure you want to spend that money, that time, that mental anguish? And what the bottom line is a whole lot of sound and fury that results in nothing. Why the hell would any rational human being go down that road? It ain't going to work. The genie is out of the bottle. We love wireless products as a community. We can't get enough of them. You can't get rid of them anymore. They're going to be here for the rest of mankind. Until we find some way of doing fiber for everything, there's going to be wireless radio. That's my prediction. Maybe Bob sees it another way. AC2AZ, K2RIW. Go ahead, Bob.
QAQ with a comment.
Glenn recognized, but Bob first. Go ahead, Bob.
I'm kind of a firm believer that people should be responsible for their own actions. I think town wants to take down the tower is fine. Let them vote on it. Everybody that voted to take it down, write their name down, put them on a blacklist, and don't allow them to own a cell phone. And now when they travel out of town or they go outside of their little village, they won't be allowed to use anybody else's cell tower because they don't want any in their town. And I don't know if that's a pragmatic solution, but it sounds very fair to me.
Yeah, on paper it sounds good, Bob, but it's not. Again, we've jumped two or three steps ahead, assuming that the lawsuit was won and the cell site was removed. You can't get there from here. All of those agencies will stop you. It is a life-saving device. It saves life and limb. You can't eliminate the radios from the fire department and from your law enforcement agencies. You can try. Not a chance. So you can't get there. And to try to prove this to those people, even that's not going to work. If a person's got an attitude that's burned into his brain hard enough, even though you show him the evidence, it might not change his mind. I mean, people with black skin are normal human beings. You try to convince certain individuals who had a different attitude for multiple generations in another part of the country. You try to convince them of that real truth. And my goodness, they couldn't see it no matter what you did for generations. It took a long time to partially correct that attitude. That's sort of what we're talking about here. So I don't think that's going to work. And even if you could do it, if you could deny these people the cell site, I mean the use of a cell phone because they've got this attitude, and you think you're going to teach them a lesson, you're putting their life and limb at risk. I don't think you want to go there. So there's a bunch of reasons why, again, if we look multiple steps ahead, I don't think we can go down that road, even though it sounds like we can. Glenn, what would you do?
WHCDL, just think I got a message for you.
Okay, should I take your message first? Is it more important than what Glenn's about to say? Over to you, Andy.
Sorry to interrupt. I just turned it on, and I can't stay because I got to get ready for work. I just want to personally congratulate you on your award. That was long overdue. Good work, and keep up the good work. It's great what you're doing, and well deserved. Just want to mention that.
Thank you, Andy. I gave a little bit of an acceptance speech, which I'm not proud of. The talk I'm doing now is better than what I did there. Someone told me that I'm restricted to a couple of minutes, and therefore my written speech, I put it in my pocket and tried to ad-lib it. It didn't come out the way I wanted it to. And then other people downrange read their speeches. So I got intimidated in a way that I shouldn't have. I didn't get a chance to say some of the things I should have said. But I'll survive that one. Thank you. Glenn, KC2QIQ, are they gonna take all the cell site antennas out of Massapequa? Are you going to drag them kicking and screaming, saying, no, you can't take away those cell sites, they're going to stay in my town? Over to you, Glenn.
Hey, good evening, Dick, and let me just say hi to Andy, how you doing? And I also really want to congratulate you today on your award. I think that's a great thing, Dick, and like Andy said, way long overdue. And very happy to hear that. It's a shame, actually, I couldn't have made it out there today, but congratulations on that. But my comment for tonight is about these antennas. And what's interesting is that, on a positive note, I've been noticing that they're actually making, like, flagpoles out of them now, which are not the most unattractive things in the world. They're actually fairly decent. I see one by the Sunrise Mall here in Massapequa. There's another one that's very interesting looking. It's right on Merrick Road between that Copaig and Lindenhurst area. It's kind of like in a marine area. And what they did was they kind of made something that looked like a mast of a ship where, you know, it's like a white pole going up, and they kind of like have a crossbar on it, and then they can hang flags off it and other things. So they're coming up with at least a nautical approach and a flagpole approach, which probably aren't all that bad, and I'm glad to see that. As a matter of fact, maybe I might have to use something like that in the future if they pass laws about on your local property. Back over to you, Dick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
You guys have often heard me brag about the fact that I think there are 5,000 kinds of antennas. And by Babnitz rule, there's an inverse or a negative of every antenna, an anti-antenna. A dipole is a piece of wire in space and everything around it is an insulator. I can do the exact opposite. I take a sheet of metal and I cut a slot where the dipole used to be. I got an exact opposite. Babnitz rule tells me I get the exact same gain, I get the exact same pattern, just that the polarization moves by 90 degrees, but everything else is the same. Once you understand that, every slot in the sheet metal of an automobile is a potential antenna, where the fender meets the body, where the loudspeaker and the rear deck of the car that goes through the back window can be made into an antenna. The side view mirror can be made into an antenna. There are law enforcement vehicles, plainclothes vehicles, where antennas are hidden all over the place, under the paint. Under a normal eye looking at the car says there isn't a single antenna there anywhere. Once you understand the principles of an antenna, I can hide all these antennas anywhere you want. So if people are attacking, let me drop. If they're attacking cell sites on aesthetics, it's going to slow things down a little bit, but the smart designers of antennas, and I know a few of them, are going to find a way of squeezing an antenna into anything that you've got that you think is an innocent object. A flagpole is just the beginning. The tree is a lousy beginning, but they can do a better job. And there's other ways you can hide the antenna. So even the aesthetic argument, if I'm a person who is really anti-RF and I want all antennas to be removed and I use aesthetics as a argument, I'm going to lose that one also. Not only will the agencies not let you do it, but the smart people will redesign the antennas so that they are not aesthetically unpleasing. So you're not going to win that argument. And maybe we should insist that more aesthetic techniques be used in the antenna design. And that's a somewhat rational argument. But even the aesthetics failed. Let me show you that one. The main thing that you're attacking when you attack aesthetics is not the thing itself. You're attacking the change. There's a sudden change in your environment, and you think you don't like it. You think you don't have control of your environment, and you're going to do something about it. Every 150 feet down, almost every street on the United States, you've got a utility pole, a telephone pole, the most dangerous things in the world. Tremendous number of people die because their automobile strikes that pole. They've been there for a zillion years, and in our mind, in our eyes, we do not see them anymore. To a person coming from Europe at a progressive town that has all underground wiring, he looks at those things and says, that's the ugliest thing in the world. How the world do you tolerate that? And the answer is, we don't see them. We see these cell sites because they're new. A smarter person will say, that thing is giving a lot of health benefits. A lot of people who potentially are going to die are not going to die because the emergency services can be called in a hurry with that cell site. That piece of technology, to me, is beautiful. An informed person could say that, and it's not quite as crazy as it sounds at first. So if they can be hidden, we can get used to them. All the aerials that were put on television, on everybody's chimney of the house for television reception in 1950, we didn't worry about that. We don't even see, if we had aerials on our chimneys now for television reception, we wouldn't see them anymore. So these cell sites, it's just a matter of the newness. Do we have to reject everything that's new? Do we have to have that much xenophobia? Rationally, the answer is no. Anybody got any comments on this? K2RIW and the TechNet. Now, look what you started, Howie. Okay, we better go over to Paul before we put him to sleep, because he's got to go to work tomorrow. Hey, Paul, what is NASA doing? The space shuttle was supposed to be launched, and they had another couple of cancellations, and there's really only two flights left. And will all those other support vehicles keep everything running there in the International Space Station? WS2N, go right ahead, Paul. K2RIW in the TechNet.
KD7DAW Mobile.
K2RIW. Please start with your name, sir.
Okay, good evening to the TechNet. My name is Tom, Tango Oscar Mike Tom. QTH is Port St. Lucie, Florida. I'm on Echolink. And I've been listening to you for about the last hour here. Don't have anything to say, but I just wanted to say that I enjoy it. Listening to it about the electromagnetic waves and all that stuff. I used to live in Bayville, so that kind of hit a nerve a little bit there, and I agree with you 100%. 87DAW in the TechNet.
Very fine, Tom. And you moved out of a hotspot, so to speak. I think there are roughly 7,000 residents in Bayville, and from what I can tell, the majority of that community of residents is supporting three simultaneous lawsuits that are attempting to remove every single antenna from that town. Law enforcement, cell sites, fire, police, emergency, whatever. They're trying to remove every one of them and put them in some other town. My question to you, and I know that their motivation is a good one. They think they're protecting their children. And I know that the village fathers are in disagreement. The village fathers, the mayor, and everyone right down from the Victoria Siegel is in favor of the antennas being there. She knows what the benefit is. She's a rational person. But they're giving her a lot of flack, and she's about to go out of office again over this flack, I think. What in the world started this? Do you believe there was a single one or two very charismatic people in Bayville who had this adverse opinion, and because they're so charismatic, they managed to convince the majority of the citizenry about this crazy opinion? That's a guess on my part. How do you think it got started, Tom, if you happen to know as a former resident? KD7DAW, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, this is KD7DAW in the Mobile. I don't know exactly how it got started, but I have a feeling about it had something to do with the cell antennas on the water tower adjacent to the primary school. And I think that's what started the whole ball rolling, and the thing escalated from there. I might get involved in that if I still live there. I've been away from it for so long, I don't know half the people in that town anymore. But I just don't understand. I know, like you said, they're trying to protect their children, but you can get somebody from the Oval Office in the White House to come over there and say it's okay to have the tower and have the cell phone towers and all that stuff, and they still will say, no, we don't want it. And that's a lot of political motivation. That's no doubt at all. But anyway, I think that's how that might have gotten started. That's what my brother told me, but I don't know that to be a fact. But that's what I think. But anyway, it has to do with the cell towers and everything else. So, and like what you said, you know, 7,000 people in that town, and 3,500 are probably supporting, taking all the towers down and all that kind of stuff. Well, hey, anybody that knows anything about radio, you take the towers out of Babel, there will be no cell phones in Babel. There will be nothing over there because of the way the geography is over there. 8078.
I can tell you how it began, Dick.
Yeah, I'm going to turn it over to Mel in a minute to find out how it's going to end. The water tower in Bayville is the tallest structure in the town. It's the logical place to put the antennas. The water tower happens to be directly across the street from the primary school. And when it comes to the cell site towers, antennas, they were there since 1952, I think it was. No, correction, 1992. Since 1992, I think they've been there. And there was a case of leukemia of a child in the primary school. There was a case of cancer of a faculty member of the school. And so the citizenry said, aha, we've got these two cases of cancer, the antennas are there, open and shut case, that's it. That's very circumstantial. That's very overly specific. There are a number of wells in the town that had to be closed down because they're contaminated. There's a whole lot of things that create cancer. And all of the literature, all of the research for 60 years of the cancer-causing possibility of RF exposure, there's no way in hell, not even with four magnitudes of error is there. The real signal coming out of those antennas, let me drop. By all the measurements of 60 years, the real signal coming out of those antennas represents nothing but heating. But how much heating? The average power out of those antennas, in the worst case scenario, might be 30 watts. You're protecting your children from a 30-watt light bulb equivalent on the top of a water tower where the slant range between the top of that water tower and your child in the playground in front of the school is 200 feet. You're protecting your child from a 30-watt light bulb, the heating requirement of a 30-watt, heating effect of a 30-watt light bulb, 200 feet away. Is that dangerous? The physics of the situation makes this whole situation preposterous. The citizens in the town are so enthusiastic along these lines, they're so dedicated to protecting their children, that the majority of them will no longer use a microwave oven, they won't use the plug-in card on their laptop computer when the child is in the house, they won't use a cell phone when the child's in the house. They're giving up an awful lot on a belief. But as Tom was saying, the sun shining on the child is giving orders of magnitude more heating effect to the child. The 30-watt light bulb equivalent, the amount of heating of those signals, of those radio signals from those antennas, 200 feet away in the worst case. If a child climbed the water tower, the stairs of the water tower, then climbed across the tank of the water tower, walked across the roof of the water tower, walked up to the antenna, kneeled down in front of the antenna, 5 feet in front of the antenna, and waited until everybody is making maximum cell phone calls, and everything, and the fire and the police, and all of those radios are running full blast, and the child is kneeling down in front of that antenna 5 foot away. The child is right at the threshold of the definition of risk by the American standard, and that has a safety factor built into it. Do you see how many errors are required to get into trouble? The child has to climb the water tower, kneel down in front of it, probably 3 feet away. 5 feet would be safe. I think if the child was 3 feet away from the worst antenna when it's running full blast, they're right at the threshold of the current definition of risk. It takes a huge number of things in error to get there. Make sure the child can't climb the tower, can't climb across the tank, doesn't walk across the tower, doesn't do it when all the radios are turned on. Come on. Mel, K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, tell you how it all started. I have a cousin that lives out there, but not in Bayville, next town over, but a friend, a couple of their friends live in Bayville Township. What happened is a number of them had made a visit to Europe. Do you know that in a number of countries, UK and a few other countries of Europe, that a nine-year-old is not allowed to use a cell phone? If you're caught on the street, if the nine-year-old, the parents are ticketed. Do you know of this law? Over.
Yes, in a way I do, Mel. I've heard hints of it in the Antennas and Propagation magazine. And the worst-case situation was the one in, what country was it now? Was it England? Or was it Germany? There was a country where a cell site was established right next door to an apartment building. And the people in the apartment building were getting all kinds of disadvantages. This was in Antennas and Propagation magazine a couple of months ago, reporting on this journal that was quoted, of this particular situation where people were getting headaches and nauseous and trouble thinking and sleeping, and they were putting tinfoil on the windows to protect themselves. All kinds of stuff was going on, and they created the lawsuit. This was in Lyon, France. All right, now I remember. And the judge in France said, there's no evidence that the cell site is creating all this damage, but these many people are this uncomfortable. For the time being, we'll order the cell site removed. The company who had installed the cell site said, this is crazy. We hadn't installed the antennas yet. The cell site wasn't turned on. We just built the structure, and these people got all of these medical problems. You see what's going on here? Back to you, Mel, KQRIW.
Okay, a number of the citizens of Bayville brought back the news of the situation that exists, like in the UK, where a child under nine is not allowed to use a cell phone. So they used that as a basis for saying, aha, this is where the problem is. It's the cell phone antennas, the cell phone system itself, and et cetera, and just electronic communications, radio waves, and the whole gavilla, as they say. This. Okay, over.
Yeah, I believe it's a recommended procedure, not necessarily a law in the United Kingdom, that a five-year-old child should not use a cell phone to converse with grandma. And the Brits are quite conservative in a couple of areas. The Brits have recommended that ham radio operators using a handy-talkie either hold the handy-talkie horizontal so that the rubber duck antenna is further away from their eyes, or use a headset so that the radio is operating from their belt, because the eyes are the most sensitive part and the reproduction organs are the second most sensitive part. Now, in the case of a young child where all the cells are reproducing very rapidly as the child is developing, to be conservative and not let them use a cell phone at 5, 6, 7, 8 years of age, it's not a great hardship to create that as a strong recommendation and maybe a law. But it's not based on a real measurement. It's based on a belief and a conservative attitude, and the risk-benefit ratio of that endeavor seems reasonable. In other words, the child is not going to suffer social damage because you won't let them talk to grandma on the cell phone. You force them to talk to grandma on the wired phone. That's not a huge disadvantage. So to set that as a rule or a recommendation or a law, just to be super conservative until you gather more data because you have a fear that maybe there's something there. It's not completely unreasonable, but it is not based on measurements. It's based on a belief. So to take that belief as the real causative agent and create it and make believe it is now a hard fact of measurement and bring it back to your town or your village of Bayville and say, aha, I want that law in my town too. You want to go back one or two more steps. Again, look ahead. Go back a couple of steps. What was it based on?
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
It was based on harmless over-conservatism that has no real strong risk. The child is not under great disadvantage because she can't talk to grandma on the cell phone. But since it's not based on a real measurement, to go go many steps downrange to say that I'm going to eliminate all the cell sites, I'm going to eliminate all the cell phones. The cell phone gives 1 million times more radio energy into your body because it's so close compared to the cell site if you live directly next door as close as you can get. So to eliminate the cell site, even if you could prove that the cell phone itself is a risk factor, to eliminate the cell site because it's part of the same system, that's guilt by association. Because a Christian person created some illegal act today, does that mean I don't allow any Christian people into my town? You see where I'm going with that one. Over to you, Mel, K2RIW.
AC2FYJ with a comment.
Okay, let me pick up Harry first, and then Mel. Harry, go ahead.
Yeah, I would just point out wait a minute. Now I just lost what I was going to say, Dick. Give me a second.
Okay, we'll go to Mel first, and then we'll come back to you, Harry. Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, you mentioned 19th century ridiculous beliefs, like you said, that took place in this country, in parts of this country, and how they discriminated against people. This is the 21st century superstition, Dick. It's part of human nature to have somebody to blame. You know, this is how wars have started, how in our time a terrible thing like the Holocaust took place because of stupidity. So why do you think that people now are more enlightened than they would have been, say, 70 years ago? This is human nature. And you, like you say, no amount of talking, no matter how much explaining, demonstrating, is going to change because one professor in England started the whole routine, and you see where it took off and what the result is in the UK, over.
Got it back, Dick.
Okay, we'll pick up Harry, and then I got a comment. Go ahead, Harry.
Yeah, I was just going to point out that getting rid of the cell sites in a neighborhood is sort of ostrich head in the ground thinking, because that doesn't eliminate all the other radio waves that are floating around in the area from other sources. And the other point is that you're probably in greater danger of damage to your body from cosmic rays that are constantly bombarding the planet than you are from an occasional radio signal. Just my 2 cents worth of thought.
And you could make a case in the world of physics traceable to the Bureau to back up what you just said, Harry. Yeah, the cosmic rays and the sun shining on you is tremendously more damaging than anything you can do under normal circumstances with a cell site living next door or a cell phone itself. And it's an ill wind that blows no good. Those cosmic rays that are bombarding our bodies continuously and disturbing our DNA and scrambling it, doing all kinds of things. It probably is one of the major causative agents that created the evolution of the species that allow you and I to be here today. Yeah, some of those early animals, they suffered a hell of a lot of disadvantages because of those cosmic rays and that extra sun exposure and whatever, and the terrible food they were getting at that time. And some of them would have an offspring that was, a lot of them would have an offspring that was damaged, but every so often an offspring would come along that in the process of having something wrong with the offspring, it was to an advantage. And survival of the fittest took over and evolution took place. There's a pretty strong piece of evidence saying that a lot of that probably took place. So as bad as cosmic rays are, in the big picture, they're beneficial. The strong survive. But I could make a case that cosmic rays are probably 80 decibels more dangerous than living directly next door to a cell site. I could easily make that case. And after studying the numbers, maybe it's not 80 dB, maybe it's 71.5 dB. The order of magnitude is what matters. When you run into that grizzly bear in the woods, you don't have to know is he 600 pounds or 690 pounds. know is he's a big, heavy...
To you, Paul, with a comment?
Paul in a minute.